Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rosdahl. Thanks for downloading this episode of the Corner Office Podcast. Today, I'm talking to Louis von Ahn. He is the co-founder and CEO of Duolingo, the free language learning app. It's got something like 300 million users all over the planet. It makes learning new languages feel a little bit like playing a game. He's also a computer scientist. He used to teach at Carnegie Mellon University. Before Duolingo, he co-founded the system CAPTCHA. You know those things, right? Those little tests, the numbers and the letters that can tell if you're a human or a robot on the internet that he gave away to Yahoo, as you'll hear.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Louis von Ahn, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
When you were trying to raise money for this thing, what was the elevator pitch? What did you go out to your funders, your venture capitalists, and say?
Well, I basically said Duolingo is going to be, well, it depends on which round of funding, but I mean, in the earlier rounds.
Let's start the first round, you know, the early rounds, when you were still trying to figure out what it was.
Yeah, in the earlier rounds, you know, we hadn't even really launched an app or anything. We basically just said, look, Duolingo is going to be a free way to learn languages. At the time, most of the ways there were to learn a language, like Rosetta Stone, were extremely expensive. And there's this weirdness where most of the people trying to learn a language in the world are actually trying to do so in order to get out of poverty. So it was this mismatch where most of the people trying to learn a language, you know, didn't have $1,000, whereas the software that would teach you a language cost about $1,000. So it was basically the idea was to try to come up with a free way to teach languages that was also effective.
And what's the gimmick is not the right word, but what's the pivot point? What's the thing you found that makes it work in an app and in this company?
I think a number of things. I think probably the first thing was we realized that the hardest thing about learning a language by yourself is, or learning anything by yourself, is keeping yourself motivated. Mm. It's very easy to start, just like going to the gym, but it's very hard to stick with it. So quickly we started making Duolingo feel as much like a game as possible. So we've spent, in fact, years now perfecting this. So when you start using Duolingo, we use a lot of different game mechanics that keep you motivated. I think that has been a big thing. The fact that it's been free also has been a big thing and has allowed us to grow a lot. And because of that, by now, you know, Duolingo is the most popular way to learn languages across the world. We have more people actively learning languages on Duolingo in the United States than there are people learning languages in the whole U.S. public school system, for example. Huh.
I don't want to cast aspersions here, but making it sort of game oriented to keep people motivated, it's almost like you're tricking us into eating our vegetables when we're kids. You know what I mean?
It is, but we feel pretty good about that. I mean, we're tricking you into something that's good for you.
Yeah, you're a computer scientist, right? You're a PhD computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon. What do you know about learning and teaching languages?
You know, by now a lot, but when I started, very little. You know, when I started, in fact, it was very little. I'm not a native English speaker. Right. I'm a native Spanish speaker, but I learned English at a very early age, so I actually don't remember having learned English. Then I tried learning French when I was in high school because I had a crush on a girl. And
how did
I failed.
Yeah.
Well, I failed at both the class and the girl. Yeah. It was a complete failure. So that's all I knew about learning or teaching languages before starting on Duolingo. But what happened is, you know, we read a bunch of books about how to best teach languages before we launched. And it was me and my co-founder. We were both computer scientists. So we had very simple questions, you know, that engineers would ask, like, well, should we teach plurals before adjectives? Wow. Or, you know, just very, very basic stuff. And we didn't know the answer to that. But we read a bunch of books. And then we realized, actually, for most of the questions we had, there was no clear answer. So we put a course based on what we had read out. But we then got lucky and started getting a ton of users. And when we started getting a ton of users, what happened is we realized we're in a really good position where we could actually answer the questions with data from our own users. So, for example, now if we want to know whether we should teach plurals in Spanish before adjectives in Spanish or something like that, we just do a test with our users. So for the next 50,000 people that sign up, to half of them, we teach them plurals before adjectives. To the other half, we teach them the other way around. And then we measure which ones learn better. And so what that has done is it has allowed us to really improve Duolingo over time. And literally every week Duolingo is a little better at teaching you. And so that's, you know, that's where I've learned a lot. Also, now that we are a much larger company, we've also hired a bunch of people with very fancy PhDs that know how to teach languages. So I've learned a lot over time, but early on, I didn't really know anything about it.
One of the things that interested me, actually, as I was reading up on Duolingo, is that some of the lessons, some portion, not small of the lessons, are drawn up by volunteers and people who are or were users and now contribute to it. And it's Wikipedia-ish, in a sense.
It's true. It's what we've done is particularly for the smaller languages. I mean, we teach a ton of languages in Duolingo. Some of them are very large, like Spanish, and a lot of people want to learn them. There are some that are smaller in audience. You know, you can think of Navajo or Hawaiian or Swedish or even Klingon. for some of these smaller ones, it just made a lot more sense for us as a business to ask for volunteer contributors. You know, we say, hey, you know, we don't have the resources really to build a, you know, a Hawaiian course. But if anybody from, you know, our audience would like to add a Hawaiian course, here are tools that we use to add courses to Duolingo. We've opened them up. So if you want to help us, go ahead. And what that has done is we've had about 100,000 people apply to become contributors to Duolingo. The majority, you know, for the majority, we haven't actually allowed them to do this. But for a small fraction of them, we've let them contribute, and that's what has allowed us to really increase the number of languages that we teach from, you know, three or four very large ones to, you know, 30 plus.
If you're a free service, right, I can download the app and get going right away. How are you making money?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, one of the things about Duolingo, so we do make money, but one of our main things is we really wanted to make it be the case that it is always possible to learn the entirety of our content, even if you don't have, you know, a credit card. So really, we're not going to charge you for it. So that's a basic mission for the company. But there are other ways to make money. So for example, we have so many users that we can make, you know, tens of millions of dollars by just putting an ad at the end of every lesson. So that's one way. We also now have a subscription service that you can pay, and it does a few things. We don't charge you for the content, but it does a few things. First of all, it turns off the ads, but it also gives you access to a few kind of extra features. And it's Duolingo Plus, and that makes even more money than the ads.
It might help folks to sort of place you in the context of the evolution of how we use our computers to know that you're the guy who came up with the CAPTCHA system, right? Those distorted letters and sometimes numbers that you have to type in to convince whatever app it is or website it is that you're not a robot. I do wonder, though, from that start, which I think you gave away to Yahoo, right? Didn't you give it away?
Yep. Yeah. That was many years ago I gave that away
so
to Yahoo.
Okay, so you gave that away, and now you're running a company valued at like $700-something million. Where'd you learn the business of running a business?
You know, I don't know. It kind of happened as I was going along. So the first project that I worked on was the CAPTCHA. That I just gave away. I was just happy that Yahoo was using it. Then a few years afterwards, I actually started a company, but I started a company because I kind of had to. I was working on another project that was related to the CAPTCHAs, where the idea was that it had occurred to me that a lot of people were typing those CAPTCHAs, about 200 million times a day somebody would type a CAPTCHA on the internet. And it occurred to me that we could use that time. So every time somebody types a CAPTCHA, they spend about 10 seconds of their time. We could use that time to do some valuable work. And in particular, it was helping to digitize books. So the idea with that, this was a university project. And the idea was every time somebody types a CAPTCHA, not only were we going to get them to authenticate as a human, because that was the original purpose of a CAPTCHA, but also to help us digitize books. And the way it worked is that you started from a physical book. Then that was being digitized, and the way that works is you take a digital photograph of every page of the book. Then the next step is that the computer needs to be able to decipher all of the words in each of these pictures. But for older books, the computer cannot recognize many of the words. So the trick of this company, or at first it wasn't a company, it was a university project. The trick was we were going to take all of the words that the computer could not recognize, and we were going to get people to to read them for us while they were typing a captcha on the internet. So when you were typing a captcha to buy tickets on Ticketmaster, those distorted words were actually words that were coming from books that were being digitized that the computer could not recognize. And this was a university project, and it was just an idea. At some point, I was giving a talk at at an event, and I talked about this idea that how we could use captchas to help digitize books. Mm-hmm. And sitting there was a guy who was the CTO of the New York Times at the time. And he said, well, we have this archive of the New York Times, and we've had exactly this problem. We've scanned every single paper, but the computer cannot recognize many of the words. So maybe you can help us with this. And then I went home. We did a little back of the envelope calculation about how much it would cost the New York Times to do this by themselves. The way they would do this is they would probably hire humans to do this. Sure. And we just decided we were going to charge them half of that. And it was, it was tens of thousands of dollars per year of content. And we realized we could do a year of content in 1 or 2 days with these captures. Wow. And so we started making a ton of money, but we were inside the university, and the university at some point, because I was a professor at the time, and the university at some point just said, hey, you can't do work for hire inside this nonprofit institution that is the university, so please leave and start your own company. And that is how I started my first company.
And did you ever imagine that Duolingo would be it's a force now.
Yeah, I did not think. I mean, we were before we launched. My co-founder Severin and I were, eating dinner sometimes, and he said, "Man, I would be really happy if like 100,000 people ever use Duolingo." And today we have about 300,000 new users per day. Wow. So it's really grown. But we did not imagine that, but it's been going well.
Are you a user? What language are you studying?
I am a user. I'm studying two. I've gotten pretty good at Portuguese.
That's not fair, right? Because it's kind of close to Spanish. So
people say that, but this is one of the weirdest things about Portuguese. Portuguese and Spanish is one of the weirdest relationships. Every Portuguese speaker, for some reason, already knows Spanish. Like for them, learning Spanish is very easy. The other way around is actually much harder.
Huh?
So Spanish speakers to Portuguese is actually much harder because the pronunciation is just a lot harder.
Yeah.
So that one is one, and then French. I'm an intermediate French speaker, although my accent is and pronunciation is just absolutely terrible.
Luis Van Aan, he's the CEO and one of the co-founders of Duolingo. Thanks a lot for your time, Luis. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was it. My conversation with Luis Van Aan, the CEO and co-founder of Duolingo.
Chuck B.
Thanks for listening.
¿Qué tienes que leer?
Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you choose to get your podcast.
Immediately.
Leave us a review as well. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Bridget Bonner. This episode was done by Daisy Palacios. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the Executive Director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the Senior Vice President and General Manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. Another episode for you in a couple of weeks.